did and they did some classes and then became something that after it is reflected into consciousness.
Let us
start from consciousness.
Now let us see and answer this question. Very interesting question. According to Sankhya, Prakriti is always found near Purusha. Both are independent of each other. But always found to be coexistence. Not only that, but Prakriti, for its manifestation from Avyakta, if it is to become Vyakta, it cannot become Vyakta by itself. This is a total dependence, not only the Purusha and Prakriti sit side by side, but Prakriti's movement, although it exists by itself, but its movement can is entirely dependent upon Purusha. Such is the account given by Sankhya. If you find surprising, the answer of Sankhya is, this is what it is. If you think that it's not satisfying, Sankhya's answer is that this is what it is. Reality is like that. Sankhya's concern is to describe reality as it is. And if there are certain things which remain questionable, Sankhya's answer is that this is the nature of reality. If you are dissatisfied with it, what can you do about it? Reality is like this. That Prakriti, although independent, existing by itself, it finds itself always existent in juxtaposition to Purusha. Always, it can't be helped. It is like that. Secondly, even its movement is entirely dependent on Purusha. Such is the nature of it. It cannot move except when Purusha glances at Purusha. There is something like a glancing of Purusha. Purusha, which is there, independent of Prakriti, glances at Prakriti. Now this glance is a very important element in Sankhya philosophy. Let us dwell upon it for a minute.
Difficulty can come when all the proportions are equal.
possibility always exists. And the moment the proportions of sattva rajas tamas become equal, it becomes unbalanced. The pulls are so equal that manifestation ceases. Now this can happen any time. Therefore logically you start with that moment. And when it is now in a state of complete proportions, it becomes avyakta. Then how can it be ever broken now, this kind of equilibrium? Once that equilibrium is reached, all the proportions are equal. If they are unequal, they will go on moving up. But once they become equal, and there is a complete disequilibrium, avyakta, by what force it can become now broken? Unequal distribution of proportions will always work itself out to make it more and more unequal or whatever. But once they become equal and they reach a state of unmanifest, then they can continue to be like that unless something else happens by which this can be broken. Sankhya's answer is, when Purusha glances at it, he says, now a kind of a movement starts from somewhere else. When Purusha glances at it, then this disequilibrium arises. Some new force is entered into it and Prakriti begins to manifest. Therefore, Prakriti is dependent upon Purusha for its movement, not for its existence, but for its movement it is dependent upon Purusha. Again, you have to remember that this is a statement inconsistent with the basic proposition that Prakriti is active by nature and Purusha is inactive by nature. If Purusha is inactive, how does he glance? Glancing is an act. And if his very nature is inactive, how does Purusha happen to glance at it? There is no answer to this question in Sankhya. He simply says that there must be this glancing. It is Purusha is really absolutely quiet. It has no principle of activity in it. Yet if you don't grant it the capacity of glancing, then the whole Prakriti can never move. Prakriti moves. How can we explain it? There are only two realities, inactive Purusha and active Prakriti. Prakriti at one time must become equilibrium, therefore it must become quiet in a state of unmanifested condition. But now we find Prakriti moving, therefore there must have been a moment when it has been struck from outside, it cannot be struck from inside. There is only another reality, maybe Purusha. Other than Prakriti, there is only Purusha existing in the world. Therefore, the starting point must come from somewhere else, not from Prakriti within itself, must come from outside. It is, of course, inactive principle. But unless you grant this beginning, this at least starting point, you can't explain the world, because world exists as we see it. It is moving. So we are obliged to grant that there must be one basic activity of Purusha, although inactive, but one basic activity. You may call it self-contradictory, so far so good, alright. But such is the nature of reality. It is surprising, but this is so. Not only that. Now you come to Purusha. It is inactive, devoid of three gunas, it has no gunas at all. Always side by side with Prakriti, Purusha is never found alone. It's the specialty of Sankhya philosophy. Purusha always finds itself to be near Prakriti. It is conscious, therefore it knows Prakriti. Prakriti does not know Purusha. But Purusha knows Prakriti because it is conscious. Although inactive, because it is conscious, it is capable of taking cognizance. The power of consciousness is taking cognizance. Of course, you may again say that taking cognizance is an activity. And Purusha being inactive cannot take cognizance. But if there is any cognizance at all, it is possible only for Purusha. And we are aware of all kinds of cognizances. Therefore, the only answer possible for us is that if there is cognizance, it can be only Purusha who can take cognizance. There is no other principle by which cognizance can be explained. So, once again, a mystery is there, a self-contradiction is present, but the answer is that such is the nature of reality. It is surprising, self-contradictory, to our